So I'm delighted that our speaker today will be Guido D'Amico from Parma. So Guido got his PhD from CISA, working with Paolo Creminelli. Then he was a postdoc at NYU, at CERN, and at Stanford, before joining Parma's faculty in 2019, where he's been ever since. So Guido has done this very wide-ranging work across a variety of topics in cosmology and particle physics. So he's written some very, very influential papers on massive gravity, on the effective field theory of large-scale structures, on axions, 21 centimeter, primordial non-Gaussianity, and so on and so on. So lots of, lots of interesting papers across a huge diversity of topics. Recently, he's also been interested in the full shape analyses of the galaxy power spectrum and the implications of that analysis for cosmological parameters. And so in his talk today, Guido is going to tell us about some of his recent work on roller coaster cosmology. So Guido, please take it away whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Neil, for the nice introduction and for the invitation. So I'm happy to be a seminar today. So I decided to talk about some work that I did in collaboration with Nemanja Kaloper. We did the first paper, and then also with Alexander Westphal. We did other two papers, the last one just a few months ago after the new BICEP results. So, So this work basically analyzes the idea that inflation can be interrupted, and as it will become clear from my presentation, we think it's a very nice opportunity to really think about this inside of the future experiments, for instance, on small-scale gravitational waves. So let me start with the basic motivation that led us to the first formulation. So we know that inflation was invented to explain the universe naturally. In fact, prior to inflation, basically, the universe was a set of measure zero in general relativity. You really needed to tune initial conditions very, very finely to have all the universe that we have today. Now, after inflation was discovered, cosmological naturalness, meaning whatever people regarded as the hot Big Bang problem, in a sense, translated into the usual field theory naturalness. So now we are worried about the naturalness of the effective theory of inflation. Now, if we think about just semi-classical gravity, neglecting data for the moment, we usually think that the derivatively coupled inflaton does the trick, because basically you have a potential, you assume there is a global shift symmetry that is slightly broken, and that sets you, and that gives you inflation. Now, however, there have been a lot of works on problems of this scenario with respect to quantum gravity. First of all, we know that we know there is the current law, let's say, that no global symmetries survive in quantum gravity. And also, there's been a bunch of so-called swampland conjectures that one can distill into the fact that the field range during inflation should be short, preferably sub-Planck. So for this, the usual model of derivative coupled inflaton would not work. However, moreover, there are experimental worries. If one takes a standard power law potential, then one finds too much tensor power, of course, with respect to the scalar power, tensor perturbation with respect to the scalar perturbation. And we argue that a possible answer to the theoretical worries is the monodromy inflation that many of you might already know. And with the idea that we have interrupted inflation, that we have roller coaster inflation, we also solve the data problems. Okay, so let's start with explaining the theoretical framework. So if one takes slow roll inflation, one sees that there is a small slice of a space that allows for a good amount of inflation, and this slice of a space, however, occurs only at large field maps greater than Planck, than M Planck. And in fact, if one has a potential phi to the n, this is the bound. One has to have that phi is at least greater than M Planck. And here we have the question that, can we trust the EFT arguments beyond the Planck scale? Now, to the rescue comes the idea of monodromy inflation. So the meaning of monodromy is really running around one single time. So in other words, the idea is that one can get large field excursion in a small compact field space such that the theory is under control. Now, what is the simplest physical realization of this? Well, the simplest physical realization is in fact something that we know from elementary quantum mechanics that are Landau levels with the magnetic and electric field. Now, in field theory, one can see this if one takes a four form, which by itself in four dimension would not be dynamical, and a scalar field, and couples them this way. Now, it turns out that this Lagrangian actually can be written in several different ways with dualization maps, and it really describes a massive four form. So, in one particular dualization, basically one realizes that apart from the kinetic term, the Hamiltonian has a potential, which is Q plus mu phi all square. So basically, if I think about this phase space, now I'm adding a third dimension that in fact solves my problem of field excursion. So basically this would be a stack of, would be an amount of flux. Yes, is there a question?
Yes, why would be a field excursion by itself a problem beyond Planck mass? Why? I mean, usually that's not a physical thing or anything in the action that we measure. Or...
Well, because yes, in principle, I agree with you, but I'm actually referring to the Swampland conjectures that people have brought forward in these past years. I'm not commenting on whether they are right or wrong, but they may be a worry in quantum gravity.
Okay, thank you.
Just that. So basically, the presence of this Q allows makes the inflaton Q plus mu phi. So the real field that moves is this phi, whereas the inflaton that can realize 60 E folds, even if this field moves in a compact space, is this sum. Okay. Now, when one thinks about the monodromy, so in fact this is this related to the question that this may be issues with the first principle construction and so on, conjectures, but I'm not commenting on whether you know they're right or wrong. I never really worked on them, but I just acknowledge that they've been a worry. Moreover, whenever, in general, one also in some realization of the monodromy idea, starting from the first string realization by Silverstein, Westphal, McAllister, and also the effective theories of Caloper, Sorbo, and Lorentz, one recognizes that there is a back reaction when there are large-ish field variation. And so when monodromy is at work, usually there is a back reaction that flattens the potential. This is very helpful in a view of the data, okay? Because at the end, the data are the ultimate judge of theories, and you know, they are not kind or cruel, they are indifferent. So this is why now people usually draw power that are lower than two, because they recognize that there is this class of large field models that seem to be consistent from the point of view of UV completion and naturalness, for which there is a back reaction that can be taken into account and flattens the potential. However, it turns out that in November, BICEP released their analysis of the observation up to 2018. And they are a very tight bound on the scalar to tensor ratio. So it's 0.036 at 2 sigma. And one can see that basically all of this strip of models with large field models with power law potential is basically excluded. But is it true? Notice that this is a strip that is parameterized by a number of e-folds that is supposed to be the number of e-folds of a long stage of uninterrupted inflation. But really, observations do not force us to have 60 e-folds in one go. Because between CMB and large scale structure, at the moment, we only probe the first 10, 15 e-folds. So if one allows themselves to have accelerated expansion that stops and then restarts, we relax both the theoretical worries, because not only with monodromy we relax the, you know, the worry about the field excursion, but of course, if you allow yourself to have only 15, 20, 30 folds instead of 60 in one go, then your theoretical worries are subdued. And also, we get a redder spectrum. Why? Because now your CMB modes have exited the horizon when the potential was actually steeper than what you think. So in fact, as you see, from 60 to 50, you go towards an S that is less than one. So redder spectrum. So it means that we have to show that background problems, the usual Big Bang problems, are solved by this idea. But then if that is the case, several stages of accelerating expansion are just fine. So far, we are only probing the first CMB or LSS stage. Now, this has two consequences. First, CMB constraints on models will be modified. And therefore, we add one parameter for the CMB prediction of any given model. But also, there are interesting predictions for short-scale experiments, and they are correlated usually with what happens at CMB scales. So, in fact, this idea is in principle testable. And even if new predictions don't pan out, we are really testing the longevity of inflation. This is something that we know nothing about. Nobody tells us what happens beyond the 10 to the 15 EFOLs. So, in fact, in a sense, this idea is morally similar to the desert of between the standard model and God scales. You see here there is the M Planck, some string, KK modes, whatever, high energy scales. Then we have the scale of the effective theory of inflation, which is basically H. And then this is typically the mass of the inflaton. And then we assume that there is nothing until, you know, basically today, where we see standard model, we see the cosmological constant. So is it possible that there are other scales here? Now, we want to see, we want to look at the possibility that these scales are there. And as usual, whenever there is a new scale, there should be something happening observationally. So, first task, I have to solve the horizon problem and the curvature problem. So, you have in mind that this is the simplest architecture that I'm talking about. Basically, this is a plot of the number of EFOLs as a function of the conformal time, and instead of having just an exponential, I'm allowing stages of decelerated expansion. Now, what is the horizon problem? Well, the horizon problem, as you all know, is the fact that if we had the normal matter, we would see many causally disconnected regions today in the CMB, whereas, as we all know, we see basically homogeneity. So usually inflation solves the horizon problem by making this integral with respect to the length scales a constant. Whereas in normal matter, this decreases with time. This ratio decreases with time. So in roller coaster, what happens is that this is also solved. Okay. Similarly, we have a curvature and homogeneity and isotropy problem. So what is what does inflation do? Basically, you can imagine in two dimensions that you are on a sphere, you inflate the sphere, and then you find yourself in a region that is much flatter. Okay? So in normal matter, the curvature basically grows, whereas during inflation, the curvature goes down exponentially. In roller coaster inflation, if you intersperse the total number, the period of inflation with the periods of decelerated expansion, you still get this exponential, which is corrected by some number that's reminiscent of the normal matter behavior. So here, for simplicity, we consider radiation. And so the curvature problem is solved. Notice that, don't worry about the scale. I called it omega k, but this is really normalized. So the curvature problem is also solved. So the curvature really decreases exponentially. And then after what here is indicated, that's 40, it falls, basically starts growing again. Okay, so we do expect, in fact, that curvature in a roller coaster is higher than in the usual long stage inflation. And therefore, you see, one of the quote unquote possible expectation is that omega k can be maybe detectable. So, I mean, it will be easier, let's say, to make omega k detectable in a roller coaster scenario than in long stage inflation. Let's put it like that. Okay, then let me go on to calculate perturbations. Well, tensors are straightforward. Now, scalar perturbations are a dynamical input. So this is really what is driving inflation. It's the order parameter that yields accelerated expansion. Now, multiple stages usually imply multiple fields. And therefore, we must have a little hierarchies, as I was saying before, with the different energy scales. Now, this is clearly a tuning, but this is really no worse than a tuning than the standard selection of right parameters to have a long stage inflation. So personally, I'm not super bothered by this tuning. What is really needed for inflation to work is just approximate scale invariance of the theory for long enough, even piecemeal, even at pieces. So you have a stage in which your potential is flat for a while. You have a stage in which it is flat for a while, and so on and so on, with the proviso that comes from data that the first stage needs to last at least 15 infolds. Okay, so in fact, you see, solving the equations is not so complicated because the mode equation is basically the same as Schrödinger's equation. However, it's just with anti tunneling boundary conditions that basically you have a incoming and outgoing mode at the end instead of the beginning. So the first simple example that I'm going to show you, we dub the Cosmologia con quattro stagioni, and here I show you the different behavior of the commoving horizon. And this is basically the potential for tensors, because of course, scalars are more model dependent. But basically, you see that now there are modes that have a non-trivial behavior. There are modes that just say, just have a super small wavelength and stay always within the commoving horizon. Modes that are almost always larger, just go out and that's it. And modes that, in fact, go out and go back. Okay, so we expect these different behavioral modes to be in the power spectrum that we measure. So how do you calculate the power spectrum? Well, basically, you take the field modes, you evolve a different case as a function of tau, and then you go and look at the end, the modes that are out of the horizon, what is their amplitude as a function of k. And then as a function of k, I expect something like this. So this is the simplest example in which we assume just stages of radiation between stages of the sitter. And you see that as a function of k, the power spectrum has these interesting steps and interesting oscillations. Now, this is the power spectrum of tensor in particular, as the one for scalar is more model dependent. But in principle, there are many different things now that you can do at the transition of these stages. First of all, let me mention what I was saying at the beginning. So this is, in fact, before November, before the Bicep result came out. Power law inflation is viable again. So you remember these power laws that were basically outside the range, outside the potato of Planck at n equal 50. Well, now they are back in the game because, of course, they are flattened the power laws. And if the first stage of inflation lasts less than 50 EFLs, you know, they are viable again. Of course, this model building doesn't mean that everything goes. For instance, take an exponential potential, it doesn't really work because basically it doesn't depend on the number of EFLs, okay? So are there any questions about this basic idea? Okay, if not, I'm going to
sorry,
talk
can
about-
Can you go back for a second? Sorry, you say that the exponential doesn't work. I just want to see.
Meaning that you know, it doesn't depend on the number of EFLs, and so that's it. I mean, I cannot do much.
I cannot changing C and changing the number of EFLs goes in the same direction, so it doesn't. Okay.
Yeah.
But with power laws, you could do it.
Yeah, power laws, I can do many different things. Like, I mean, if I go even from 50 to 40, then I'm okay. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, let me go on. So this, which is the content of the first paper, is basically the main idea, just the setup of how you would calculate things. Now, I go to the simplest, I mean, one, a very simple, let's say, but extremely interesting example, because now I have basically a two-field model in which I have two stages of monochrome inflation. And they are separated by matter domination when the first ends. So basically, this potential is flat in the phi 1 direction, then the phi 1 is the inflaton that generates the modes that we see in the CMB. And then at the end, it oscillates. And if you write down the evolution, this really resembles like matter and goes on for about one infold. And finally, you go back to have inflation, because then you have this gutter where you slow roll in the direction of phi 2. So this is like, a, if you want, a perfect example of what I was what I was suggesting until now. So as I said, this is a reduced field ranges, and probably this is more generic than it looks in UV setups, string-inspired setups that usually have many different directions. So what are the CMB prediction of this model? Well, the solution is easy given the small hierarchy. Notice that here I assume there is just a small hierarchy between the two fields. And so I can solve the two field equation, but really you can understand that basically you have two effective single field with different pivot scale. So the modes that go out at CMB stage, I just count from here. And this is what happens as a function of the parameters of the model. Okay, so if I go from P small to P high, I move up in R. And whereas if I go from mu small to mu high, I go in this direction. So I move also redder in NS. And of course, you see that I have an additional parameter that now I can leave free. And you know, if I have the number of e-folds, which is about 40, even 35, I am well within Planck bounds. However, as I said, in November, the BICEP paper came out. So is this completely excluded? Well, there is one thing that I didn't consider yet, but it's actually quite common in field theory construction. And it is, if we consider irrelevant operators, derivative operators, which we call monodromy as strong coupling. So how to construct a strongly coupled effective theory? Well, you remember the Lagrangian I wrote in the beginning. This is just a massive four form. If you dualize, basically, you are very much constrained by the gauge symmetry. It's not that if you have a massive gauge theory, the gauge symmetry, the gauge redundancy goes away. It's just that there is a longitudinal mode and the gauge symmetry is non-linearly realized. Therefore, you can actually classify all the operators in the effective theory using naive dimensional analysis. And in fact, well, this is basically what I already told you. So what happens is that whenever computing loops, phi scales as phi over the cutoff, and then there is a 4 pi that comes from loop factors, and derivative and masses are suppressed by the cutoff, and this q is proportional to m times phi, and so it scales this way. So after all this, we actually wrote already a Lagrangian in 2017 of the most generic monodromy, single field monodromy. And it turns out that this Lagrangian is nothing but K inflation. So if you take monodromy models and consider irrelevant operators, the effective theory is nothing but the K inflation, which in fact was conceived as the first effective theory of inflation. So what do higher derivative operators give me? Well, they give a flattening of the potential. And sorry, not only flattening of the potential, there is something that I didn't write correctly. They also suppress the speed of sound. And the speed of sound plus flat speed of sound suppresses R and also the flattening, because basically they increase the scalars with respect to the tensors, but also generate non-Gaussianities. So now data tell us that the non-Gaussianity cannot be much larger than order 10 at the moment, single field non-Gaussianity, basically equilateral non-Gaussianity in this context. But then coupling cannot be too strong. However, as we saw, stronger coupling gives a smaller tensors to scalar ratio. So in these constructions, I have a lower bound on R. So if I don't see R in the next years, I'm basically done with all this class of models. Okay. So here we considered, in particular, two different realizations of the monodromy. The first one as a cubic operator. This is a cubic, sorry, a sextic, because x is d phi square. This is motivated by stringy constructions. And you see the triangles are the predictions in the absence of this x cube term. If I consider the x cube term, then I have the dots. And then I'm also comfortably within the Bayesian bounds. This is instead a more complicated behavior, which is the behavior of DBI inflation. You see, the behavior of DBI inflation deviates with respect to the to this one because it exhibits this strange behavior starting from the triangles. Now, why is this the case? Well, it is because I'm fixing the number of ifolds that I want instead of fixing, if you want, the speed of sound at horizon exit. And basically, if you do this, then the speed of sound is automatically selected. And therefore, you see that the difference between the canonical kinetic term and the DBI term translates into this weird looking curves. But this is all to say that in DBI inflation, where the speed of sound can be very small, whereas here, because of the structure of this Lagrangian, it's limited to 1 over square root of 5. Here, where this can be very small, I still have a lower bound on R. Okay, I cannot go arbitrarily small. Also, because if I were to go arbitrarily small, I would have a very large non-Gaussianities. So we can fit the data, provided that we recognize that inflation can last less than 60 e-folds at once. And this is what I was telling you, the tension between R and non-Gaussianity. Now, these plots, I did it myself, so they are not, I put together constraints, so they are not the result of Sanchain. So there is this caveat to bear in mind, but they basically are a representation of the current allowed parameter space. So here, basically, the non-Gaussianity is zero. So the only worry comes from having too large R. In DBI inflation, there is this curve in the FNL R plane. So if you wanted to have a very small R, you are forced to have larger non-Gaussianities. But it is interesting that no matter how strongly coupled the theory wants to be, there is still a lower bound on R if inflation has to last 20, 30 folds. So what does the future, what will the future give us? Well, this is from a talk by Ichiro Komatsu, the expected limit from Lightbird if we do not find a signal. With respect to the current, well, not really the current, this is a BK15. Now, this is the actual two sigma limit. And here I had fun in drawing the, let's say, if we were to take the one sigma limit of today, this is what we would find with Lightbird, something many sigmas away from zero, which would really strengthen our understanding of inflation. So finally, the additional signatures of the model. As I said, the naive and standard behavior is that the power spectrum goes down in steps because modes, some modes re-enter the horizon, so they are not, they will decay and then they go out of the horizon again. However, whenever there are transitions, interesting things can happen. One of the interesting things that can happen comes about if, as it is generic in string theory construction, you have couplings to gauge fields, Chern-Simons type couplings. So in four dimension, this translates into a coupling to a dark U1, an axion FF dual coupling, as it has been studied many, many times by several people. So the coupled axion gauge field system is seemingly very simple to write down. Equations are really simple to write down, but they are extremely difficult to solve. Why? Because basically there is a tachyonic dependence of one helicity whenever the field phi is fast. So if I take the equation for the gauge field, one of the helicities acquires a negative effective mass whenever this parameter xi is large. And this parameter xi is large only at the end of inflation. So now the full solution is complicated. However, we can approximate this for constant xi, and therefore we have usually an exponential production until it cuts off, because of course then there is back reaction on the scalar field. And this is the amount of energy in the gauge fields, okay, for different parameters of the model. Now, what can we say? Can we trust these solutions? Well, yes, we can actually trust the solution up to quote-unquote end of inflation, meaning whenever the exponential doesn't become too big. So we have some aid by numerical solution and some better analysis, okay? So what I'm going to show you can be trusted, at least at an order of magnitude level, but actually more than at an order of magnitude level. So what are the observables? So what happens if I produce one helicity of a dark Q1? Well, I get non-Gaussian scalar perturbations, usually, and also gravitational waves. Now, gravitational waves are chiral. They are given by this formula. So this is the standard De Sitter one. And then this psi enhanced term is the chiral piece. And their frequency is related to when these modes, when this transition happens. So when this when the gravitational waves are produced, which I parameterize by the number of e-folds of the stage of inflation that is related to NCMB and KCMB. So here I'm assuming that they are produced after the first stage of inflation when the CMB modes have gone out. And at the end, I have this coupling that becomes large and produces gravitational waves. So what happens? Well, as a function of frequency, which here basically, so here I have a fixed frequency, a fixed number of e-folds, 35, and I'm varying the parameters of the model. I have a very loud signal for LISA or Big Bang Observatory, okay? So we can trust the signal up to here, and there is some uncertainty in this gray band due to the fact that some modes decay during the decelerated stage. What if I vary the number of e-folds? Well, I just shift the frequency. So this is very, very interesting, because now I can have a signal in the range of very different instruments. Nanograph, SCA, LISA, the SIGOR, BBO, Einstein Telescope. Not only, this number now tells me what the prediction of the model for the CMB would be. Therefore, there is a tight correlation between the frequency where you would observe the signal and the position in the NSR plane that that your model is in. Now, let me finish with a caveat. So this is the data analysis result that I've been talking about so far. Notice that this is done by a chain, usually Monte Carlo Markov chains, that assumes a model. And I'm fitting, of course, late observables in the universe, CMB in primis. What if the current H0 tension is resolved in favor of having a different model that gives me a higher H0? So we entertain this possibility after looking at, in particular, these early dark energy models. In particular, here I'm showing you this new early dark energy model of Niedermann and Slot. But we notice that this behavior is common to several class of models that try to solve at H0 tension. So in this case, your understanding not only of the late time cosmology, but also of inflation would change. Because if you fit the late time cosmology in such a way that H0 tension is resolved, NS turns out to be very high, close to one. And therefore, all the models that seemed to fit the lambda CDM analysis would fit with the new model. So we just found this curious and put this as a caveat. Now, to me, this really means that there is still fun to have in the next few years, because if there is still something this big to understand, we are not out of job yet. So let me conclude. The main idea that we started to play with a couple of years ago, which, by the way, has several precursors, is why does inflation have to happen all in one go? Now, interrupting it, first of all, may help with the naturalness of the effective theory and of UV completion. And it definitely helps with fitting data for large field models. So horizon and curvature problems are easily solved. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here today. Now, the model building, in fact, reopens. Now, what does it mean that it reopens, that we cannot predict anything? No. On the contrary, interruptions give correlated signals both in large and small scales. So, in fact, whenever people calculate effects of multi-field models, two-field models like turns in field space, or even in the example that I showed you, the production of gravitational waves, they only consider this you know, locally. So they say, oh, this may happen, and this is the answer. So the what I try to convey is that, in fact, instead, if you consider this as an interrupted inflation, then you would correlate signals, both in large and small scales. So gravitational waves, for instance, but maybe also primordial black holes. So what are other interesting observables to see? And well, I showed one simple realistic example, which is the double monochrome inflation, which we called it a gravity waves factory. So yeah, we are on the look for more examples and more predictions. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Guido. So let's all unmute to give him a round of applause for his great talk. Okay, so we have time for a few questions. Please feel free to jump in. Well, I can start maybe. She didn't say much about scalar perturbations. Should I expect, similarly to get, suppressed power spectra on the scales that, on similar scales where you're showing suppression of the tensor power spectrum, so like K of like 0.1 or so?
Yes. As I said, scalars are very much model dependent. But yeah, naively, you know, simplest model, you would expect a suppression and oscillations around that suppression as well.
Right, right. And so then if you impose constraints from like Lyman alpha forest, then would it push this like parameter, you know, region, you know, towards having like more e-folds of inflation, like say like 20 e-folds instead of like 10 or 15?
Yes, definitely. Yes, definitely. Right. That is, in fact, there is a figure that which is exactly the amplitude of our spectrum as a function of k. You have this figure in mind. Yes, of course. Now that figure is precisely what we want to fit, and we realize that there is nothing here and nothing there. So right. If, of course, Lyman alpha tells us that you need to have not interrupted inflation there or not features, things like that, yeah, then it would be more 20 rather than 10, 15, yes.
Okay, great, thanks.
Yeah, but then, of course, let's see, sorry. Yeah. So if I have 35, it's simple to have, gravitational waves, for instance, in the LISA window. So, gravitational wave experiments, gravitational wave astronomy, we really don't know what to expect.
Right.
So this was very exciting when I started playing with these sensitivity curves, because you could see this.
Yeah. And so nanograv, just remind me, so nanograv, I guess, is like 10 to the minus 7, 10 to the minus 8 hertz, like on this part?
Yes, those, yeah, nanograv scale would be like this way. So yeah, maybe I've been a bit too optimistic. Of course, if you decrease NCMB, you would just, translate this. So nanogravenska would be here. And then, then you have LISA, the SIGO. The SIGO BBO have a very similar frequency range and sensitivity curves. And this is Einstein telescope, right?
Yeah. Okay, great, thanks. Any further questions for Guido?
I had a similar question.
Yes.
What constraints will you get from the sort of shape of the suppression around K of 0.1 from like the galaxy power spectrum?
So 0.1 is still within. If there is an interruption during this range of scales, so 0.1 is really the scale that we observe in CMB LSS, then I would really expect big oscillations in the primordial power spectrum, some features, some suppression. So I would say that this is like completely excluded in this range of scales, right? For the moment. Not for the moment. Really, it's really excluded. So I have to push this to the scales that we don't observe yet. So as Neil was saying, with the addition of Lyman alpha, probably it's more like 20 folds of an interrupted inflation.
Thanks again, Guido, for your great talk.